This is Soho Radio.
Everyone, what a beautiful day. It's as beautiful as my new Drive Time gig on Radio 2. No, I've said too much. Hey, I'm Bebe Lynch and you're listening to Bebe Does Soho on your fantastic Soho Radio. I'm all yours the next 2 hours. Shall we do it?
My chic gaga.
I want your love. I want your love.
Fits. Baby, can't you see when you
I'm Bebe Lynch, and that was Chic featuring Lady Gaga and I Want Your Love. Have you seen A Star Is Born yet, producer Alice?
No.
What do you mean no?
No, I haven't.
Do you want to?
What is it?
Oh, my God. How are you? What's been happening, me? I gave my Soho Radio boss a vibrator today. True story. Let me tell you about today's show. Our first guest is award-winning journalist. It's on his chair. In the other room, Alice. Our first guest is award-winning journalist, digital TV producer and author, Miss Caroline Millington. Caroline will be telling us all about her amazing new book, Kindfulness, and all about her Soho. Calm down, Caroline. And in the second hour, we'll be joined by writer, journalist and programme director of Croydon Literary Festival, Claire Woodward. So please join in. Tweet at Soho Radio and at Bebe Lynch. Tweet and say hello. Or tweet and tell me off for rabbiting about sex toys. Shut up, that's hilarious. This is BB Does Soho on Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. And that was 24 Karat Magic by Lil Bruno Mars. Guess what? Our first guest is here. Caroline Millington is an award-winning journalist and media professional. She worked for national magazines such as Woman's Own, and now for 16 years before launching a digital career in television. Caroline now works as a digital producer at ITV. Her first book, Kindfulness, is out now, and Caroline is here to tell us all about it. Welcome to Soho Radio, dancer.
Good afternoon.
Is it afternoon?
Yeah. It's afternoon. Oof. It's literally afternoon.
Did you have any sleep?
Yeah, I slept really well.
Oh, you do look like you look refreshed.
Fresh. Makeup fresh.
What did you dream?
No, I had a nightmare last week though. Woke me up.
What about
in the middle of the night? Anxiety dream, being chased. I threw a child like over a railing, killed it. It was awful. I think I'd watched.
Hello, mum's now.
Hello.
You can catch her on Twitter at Showbiz Millie.
I was watching The Walking Dead before I went to sleep. Right. But last night I watched it and didn't have nightmares. So it's all good.
My old anxiety dream used to be, and it still is, I know this hour's about you, is me trying to get ready to go somewhere and no one will let me have a shower.
Wow.
What's that about?
Have you ever had the teeth? Teeth falling out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mine's normally being chased or trying to get away from people.
I know this is honestly your hour and about Soho, but in a minute. But I was chased once by my mum, evil mum, and then I got on the bus and jumped on the bus and, oh, thank God, she won't get on here. And then the conductor, in the days when there were conductors, came up to me and I looked up and it was my evil mum.
Wow.
Yeah. Hey, nice to see you.
Lovely to see you.
How long has it been?
20 years.
Tell everyone how we met. I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar.
And I was drinking. No. It must be about 20 years ago. 90 or 22. No, 20 years, I reckon. 98. I decided when I grew up, I wanted to be a journalist.
Yeah, well done.
And BB was a journalist. So I managed to wangle a month's work experience at New Woman magazine, where BB worked. And she's one of the only people I remember. I think I remember three people from. Aww. But I do remember you. And then I think.
Is that because I beat you up regularly?
Probably.
Because you've got my tea wrong.
I think it's because you were like, yeah, make me more tea. But it was that month that made me go, right, this is what I want to do. I want to be a journalist. I want to work in these glossy magazines.
That's
this is amazing.
So mad.
And then I think we just reconnected on social media.
Yeah, well, you stalked me.
Yeah, that as well. And I was let me find you.
Aww. How was my hair then? Good.
Same, yeah. You were just like glamorous. I was like, I want to be BB when I grow up. How do I do this? Were you features editor?
No, I wasn't even staff. I was just.
Oh,
I was.
You just swanned in.
Just owned the place, mate.
Yeah.
No, I go. I keep saying, mate. My brother Daniel gets really upset. Thanks, mate. No, I was freelance, but I would be in there about two. I was contributing editor, so I was there about 3 or 4 days a week. But yeah. Brilliant mag, wasn't it?
So fun. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
It was like the girls loaded.
Yes.
Can we say that?
I guess so.
I think
it was like boundary breaking, I think, at that time.
Yeah.
Oh,
R.I.P. New Woman. And you've gone from the dizzy heights of making me decaf badly to now you've got a book out.
I know.
I'm so full of envy. I honestly think anyone who writes a book is genius.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So look, tell us about.
Have you read it yet?
Doesn't matter. Tell us about Kindfulness. So it's a book that teaches us how to blend mindfulness with being kind to ourselves.
Indeed. There was a piece written in The Guardian about it this week.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
One of the guys from Guardian Labs wrote a piece basically trying to apply it to his life for a week to see
what
it was like.
Brilliant.
And I didn't know they were doing it, so I read it. I was like, oh no, what happened? And the headline was like, kindfulness sounds like someone's trying to sell me yoga pants, which made me howl for a start. And I was like, it's not. And firstly, it is for guys as well. So it was really nice to see. Okay, look, a man's read it and applied bits and bobs. It's definitely not about yoga pants, unless you do yoga.
Unless
namaste, that's all cool.
Yeah.
But really, it's just
did
about...
Did you just sneeze?
No, I said namaste.
Oh, bless you anyway.
Thank you, Gizm Tight. It's about being...
Mazel tov.
Oh, gosh. It's about being kinder to yourself. And by that, maybe it is yoga or a hot bath and all that, but it's not. It's more about saying no to people. Oh. And it's more about putting yourself first. So kindfulness sounds like such a gentle word.
Yeah.
And it is. Maybe that's what you want to apply to yourself, is just like do some more meditation in life, because no harm ever came from meditation. However, it's also about setting boundaries and being a bit more kick-ass at work and saying, actually, I want to do this. I don't want to do that.
I am so bad at the boundaries.
Yeah. So exact. So me too.
Yeah.
And that's where it kind of.
Let's start a hashtag called me too. That might.
Yeah. Well, we're all on that one already, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. So the strap line is how to be kinder to yourself and find true happiness. You've set you and the book quite a goal. That's quite a challenge, isn't it?
It is. I've already said this year, this is like the happiest I've ever been. That's true, and I stand by that. That doesn't mean I'm happy all the time. And it doesn't mean that my life's perfect. And I think that's the difference between happiness and perfection. This book is not, like, it doesn't end with, and I lived happily ever after, and your life's going to be wonderful too, because that's not how things work. A lot of it I still have to apply to myself. So it's, if I'm beating myself up, we were talking, you were saying, oh, I'm so envious of people writing books. So am I. But if I sit there and go, oh my God, look, Dolly Alderton wrote a book and she's in her 20s.
Is she in her 20s?
I know. So I was, you know, I think comparison's such a dangerous thing because it only ever makes you feel like a failure.
Yeah.
So when I'm thinking that, I'll be like, hang on a minute. Don't beat yourself up at what you haven't done. Look at what you have done. So a lot of it is those, when we sort of fall down, which I do when I'm driving, go into a little world of daydream, driving.
That sounds very safe. So that's your kind of spiral space.
Yeah, but like that's what, if you're driving and you're on your own, like you're just, for me, that's my thought. So I might be daydreaming or just, you know, end up self-flagellating over something I haven't done right or haven't got yet. And then it's, if you do that too much, which we all have, if we've got too much time on our hands, we all tend to do, you end up really being miserable because you're looking at what you haven't got or what you haven't done rather than what you have. And that's quite dangerous and can make you feel really miserable.
Really miserable. So it sounds like you wrote the book from a personal, coming from a personal perspective.
Yes.
So you, why did you write self-help, I guess is the question.
Yeah. We were saying earlier, it would have been really easy to write 101 celebrity sex scandals or like
ooh,
some...
Who? Tell me.
Oh, everyone.
Okay.
I'll tell you after. Or like a celebrity-based book because my career has been in entertainment journalism, hence being Showbiz Millie. It's like this hangover from my career now I'm stuck with, but that's all good. I had depression when I was at university, so obviously a long time ago, and had counselling then. So it's something I'd always kept an eye on. And then a few years ago, I was feeling quite low and really discombobulated with life, but didn't know why. And it wasn't quite depression, but I was just not happy. And a friend of mine recommended her therapist. So I started going to therapy, which I still do. And in a way, that was like an act of kindfulness. I didn't realise at the time. I decided to look after myself and have said and say in the book, you don't wait till you're in battle to put your armour on. So for me, it was all preventative and trying to be more self-aware and why can't I be happy? Because if you're miserable, then that comes with a bucket load of guilt of, well, how dare I be miserable? So a lot of it was born out of that. And it's not my personal therapy. It's what I learned. So what I learned in therapy was I'm a people pleaser.
Oh. You're pleasing us now.
I know. Oh, thank you.
You can't stop it.
I know.
You can't help yourself.
It's great. But then you end up just putting everyone else first and resenting people.
And really resenting,
So it's extraordinary.
I rarely do the high five, but...
Yeah.
So do you do that thing where they'll, and in 2 months' time, they'll do something and that triggers the worth of the list that you've got about them? Yeah.
And you hold on to it. And
yes.
It's in every aspect of my life. So like family, friends, work, dating, everything. I was like, oh, this is not good. I thought, I went in going, oh, you know, I'm such a good friend because I'm really adaptable and I make everyone so happy and I'm so kind. And I was like, no, I'm not. I'm a mug. I am mugging myself. And also when you actually take responsibility for it and go, this is no one else's fault. This is just me. So I was a work martyr. The chapter breakdown in the book is like, it looks at everything from work to body image to social media.
Ooh.
And how everything impacts on you. So at work, I was a complete work martyr. Oh, I'll do that. I'll stay late. And then you sit there going, look at me. I'm late. I'm staying here late. Oh, it's such a thankless task.
So how do you change that?
I think realise you're doing it is the big step. If you realise that if you're putting yourself out there for work or your partner or girlfriends or whoever and you're not getting it reciprocated and you resent them for it, or you might throw it back in their face when they've not done anything wrong, if you're not communicating your needs properly.
Yeah.
So once you take responsibility, it's all about taking responsibility for your own life and for your own happiness. And once we stop blaming everybody else or blaming circumstance, and this is like top line, this is not dealing with, you know, big things in life like serious illness and grief and things, but for all first world problems are all manageable. And if you're looking after yourself and your self-confidence and your self-worth, because people pleasing is all connected to self-worth, then when something comes along and whacks you in the face, you're better equipped to deal with it.
It's so interesting. I mean, I love to blame someone, so I have to lose that out of my little brain. The chapters, the social media thing is so interesting. So, I mean, that's where you found me again, stalked me, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry I've blocked you, and I hope that didn't impact on your mental health.
I muted you years ago. It's mine.
So it's you're managing the impact of social health on mental health. Social media, sorry, on mental health. It is that bad, isn't it, for you?
Yeah. It's in, because I've worked, obviously now being a digital producer, it's like that is my job. And I was a really early adopter of social media, I think probably because, you know, I don't have enough people to talk to in real life. I talk to everyone. So I thought, oh, let's find some strangers. No, so MySpace, and then it was like Facebook. I know, RIP MySpace. Shout out to all the middle-aged people that are like, yes, MySpace. MySpace, and then Facebook, and then Twitter, and then Instagram. And I did sort of flirt with Snapchat and then realised I was way too old for it.
Doesn't matter.
Although my friend Susie Cox's book's been turned into a TV series on Snapchat.
Has it?
So shout out to Susie. It's called The Dead Girl Detective Agency, and it launched this week, and
Susie,
it's incredible. I'm so proud of her.
Oh, that's amazing.
So it's, yeah, so shout out to Susie. So along with that, at first, I think social media was such a let's go and have fun, connect with strangers, share common interests. But it's turned us to, some would deem it a monster and other people still love it. I think you have to curate it yourself. You have to take responsibility. Like if you went to a party, you'd pick the people you hung out with and you'd avoid the toxic people. Do the same on social media. You can mute people, report people, you can unfollow people, you can unfollow accounts. So if you're spending time on Instagram and come away going, I don't have any pictures of my hot dog legs on a yacht and now I feel rubbish and where's my perfect life with my perfect linen in my bedroom, don't follow those accounts.
You know, I hear everything you're saying, but I am a Catholic. And so self-flagellation, A, is lovely.
Oh, isn't and, it?
Oh, you're Catholic too?
No, but I went to convent school.
Okay, well, there you go.
Near
and,
enough.
And B, my guilt, the guilt gene. Yeah. So, for instance, someone recently was following me, and that was nice. But then he would, everything I'd post, he'd comment on, everything. And then he started sending me like links to things that he wanted me to watch, and then would say, have you watched this? Have you watched this? You should really, I went, oh my. And in the end, and then I thought, right, just block. And then I thought, no, that's mean, because then he won't know what I've, why? And I'm like, oh my, I don't know him. Never met
him.
This
is on Instagram.
This is on Twitter.
You can mute him.
I just don't want him there.
But you don't have to chat back to everybody.
I know. I feel like I have to.
You don't have to.
Why don't I have to?
Give yourself permission not to.
You give me permission not to.
I don't need to.
What?
Because you're in charge of your own life, BB.
Cut that. Put that down. We'll clip that. There's also building self-confidence.
Yes.
I'm just basically saying everything I want you to fix. So how do I do that?
I don't know how to fix everybody else. I can only share what you're like, fix me. And I'm like, I'm not a
therapist. So in the book, are you saying the issues that you had and how you dealt with them with the therapist?
Yeah, and there are, I mean, I've got 8 contributors to it. So there are people who, I've got a couple of life coaches, dating relationship experts.
Our lovely Annabelle.
Annabelle, yes. Parenting advice. So there's something for everyone. Yeah. Like it's a proper pick and mix, whatever applies to your life.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to confidence, knowing the right people to be around with helps. That bring out the best in you. Because we do, I think, just by osmosis, absorb people's negativity, or if they're bringing you down, or they're not picking on you, but you know, those, if they play on your insecurities. But a lot of it comes from you. And I think going back to the changing your thought process, if you're not confident because you're always doubting yourself, and there's the thing about, you know, negative thoughts. And I was like, if you take the word negative and say doubting, I think that applies to most of us. We doubt ourselves. And I sat on the idea for the book for so long because I don't have a platform. I'm not an influencer or a celebrity. Like, why would anybody want to read what I've got to, some girl that's been in therapy's got to say for herself? That's really arrogant. And then I was like, well, why not?
Yeah.
Exactly. It was like my self-doubt. So it took me a long time to sit comfortably and go, I've got something to say. I want to write a book.
Yeah.
And even now, it's kind of, it's very, not strange, and I kind of... creeping out of like shrugging off the whole imposter syndrome costume and being like, when people are like, it's amazing, I'm like, I know. But not in an incredulous way, but just in, I know, this is insane, like how fun and how brilliant. And it doesn't happen to everyone, and I made it happen. And I think if you can validate yourself through your own work, so depending how you self validate, I did mine through my career for a long time and then changed that up.
Yeah,
I've never validated through a relationship. So if you're looking to people or a career, and that goes back to the work martyr thing, if you marry yourself to your desk and then you look to your boss as not a partner, but you know, that kind of relationship that you're looking for them to say well done, that's no good, because that can all get taken away from you because it's business.
You're good.
Thanks.
You're good.
Therapy.
Thank you. I know, I love mine. I love
it's
my
best.
Therapist. Obviously, you, Alice, you in therapy?
No,
you will be. You will be.
Everybody, everybody should try it at least once in their life.
And I wish I'd done it. I really do.
It's nothing but good.
Yeah.
It's nothing but good.
Then months later, I was like, God, I'm still working the shit out of my head.
Yeah.
Everybody's got something.
Or come to me. No, I'm really good. Advice. Caroline,
yes.
In your brilliant journalism career,
yes,
you never really wrote opinion pieces, did you? Or first person, did you?
No, I wrote a few blogs for Now Magazine's website towards the end of my time there. I think one of my favourites was when Taylor Swift started dating Harry Styles.
Sure.
I wrote a piece on if they broke up, this would be Taylor's song, breakup song, and I wrote the song for her.
Oh.
It's still
it,
on
the
website.
Last
I can't remember, but
you
if
do
you,
remember.
If you Google it, it's still on the website, I think, of like
Taylor's website.
Yeah, she stole it. It's on her album. And I did, yeah. So that's the kind of stuff I wrote, was like celebrity based opinions, but
I don't.
It's never really been my style to. I'm a kind of build people up, not tear them down.
So was it scary, I mean, though, coming into a book, so you are putting yourself out there?
Oh, terrifying.
It's scary, isn't it?
And also writing the proposal for the book, and what I ended up sharing, the personal aspect of it, was far more than I expected to.
Yeah.
So I was writing it, and then afterwards I was like, oh, God, people are going to read this. Like, yeah. There's the whole list of talking about body image. And that's still something I'm very much working on. Recently got a personal trainer, Hannah, who's incredible. You can find her if you go to my Twitter and Instagram. She's on there. She's brilliant. And that was only in the last couple of months. So at the age of 40, I know, I don't look it.
You really don't.
Thanks. That's gin.
Gin.
Yeah. I have fallen in love with exercise and working out and how it makes me feel, what it's doing. Because at the moment, you know, it's just
you look
the
fantastic,
feeling of it.
And
thank
it's the endorphins.
You. I think it is.
Yeah.
And doing something for myself.
Yeah.
But body image has always been, I think, because society tells you that if you're not thin, then you're not pretty enough. And that, I think, with advertising, magazines, TV, everything, if you have that every day of your life, then you kind of absorb it. So it's like trying to get yourself out that funk and going, actually, no, I'm actually attractive and I'm enough.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it, but I'm getting there.
No, you're a gorgeous girl.
Thanks, doll.
Thanks, doll. With the book, with exposing yourself, I think, because I've written really personal stuff without knowing I'm going to. I do it from a place of I have to say this.
Wow.
And I think it's part of the therapy.
Therapy, yeah.
So I think what you're doing, that you did this, is part of the therapy.
Definitely.
Such a great name for a book.
Kindfulness.
Yeah, really clever.
The word popped into my head and then I looked it up and a monk had written a book called Kindfulness as well. So, but his obviously
a monk's
taken
not
it.
Gonna
a
sue.
Monk. I'm like, no.
A monk's
well,
not going to sue.
Own the word. And then there was another book called it as well. So, but everyone comes at it from different angles. And I think before Kindfulness was the whole mindfulness of being kind to the world. And there is a little bit in there about being kind to others, because obviously that's a whole aspect of it. And how I like to live my life is pass it on. Like, just be nice. It's not difficult. But yeah, I quite like the word kindfulness.
It's very clever.
Thanks.
Another leap was you, like, this incredible journalism career, BSME Rising Star Award 2016.
Oh,
I mean, that's amazing. And then you went to telly.
Yeah.
Why did you leave this incredible career? Yeah, to go to another one, granted, but why the leap?
Yeah, it was, I think, PPA Game Changer I got. Yeah. Game Changer was always my favourite. Like, Game Changer, highly commended. Not quite winning, but, you know, nearly nearly there, story of my life. And then Best Deputy at the BSME, which was the first year that was awarded, which was fantastic. I don't think there was, looking at my career, how I was going to progress in magazines. And obviously everyone's aware that Prince taken a real slamming in the last...
Prince Harry?
Prince Harry.
Do you?
Prince magazines and newspapers have taken a real slamming. So I was looking at my life and opportunities and thought, do you know what? I'm going to jump. And I actually left Now Magazine without a job to go to. But went over to ITV for sort of 3 months as a digital producer, running website and all the social media. For one of the shows, and I'm still there 2 years later.
I'm loving
which
it.
Which is great. Yeah, I do. It's different, and it's, and TV's fascinating, but it's not that different to print, as in it's content on a different platform, just like radio. So, and I love radio. So,
do you miss the buzz of? I was just going to say, do you miss the buzz of not seeing a byline? Then I saw your book in front of you. I thought, no, maybe she's all right. Did a book. Maybe she's fine. What's it like? What's it feel like finishing a book?
Anticlimax.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
Not. I mean, not. I finished it and sent it off. I mean, the day that I signed the book contract, I was on my own in my flat and signed it. And I was like, yay. And it was, it's
high-fiving really, yourself is just weird,
I know,
it?
I was like, okay. And then the day, I've not even seen it in a bookshop.
No way.
It's a bit weird walking to a bookshop asking for your own book.
I'll do
and
it
I did
you.
It.
Oh, did you?
And they didn't have it.
Because they'd sold out, lady. They'd
yeah,
sold
no, they
out.
Had. And they I went to Waterstones and they were like, oh, we don't have one here. And I was like, because somebody's bought it. And then and they checked and they were like, it's available at the other ones. But funny enough, because I have a full-time job, I'm quite busy. So I'm not wandering around bookshops. So it is quite strange. I haven't seen it on a shelf yet, but I know people have sent me photos of it.
It's so brilliant.
It's really cool.
That's another thing saying, I just pointed at you in quite an aggressive way, sorry.
It's okay.
The being business, I think that's a huge factor in being kind to yourself, because it just feels like another thing you've got to do.
Yeah.
I live by the beach at the moment, and every day I should be walking on the beach because I love being by the sea. And then I'm like, oh, it's another thing I've got to do.
Ooh.
Yeah, what's that? Dear doctor.
I'm just Caroline. Thinking about what you're, because there's a whole thing on to-do lists. Yeah, so I don't know where you sit with to-do lists, but
I am all about the to-do list.
So I'm all about to-do lists and stationery in general. I think it's like the writers in us. We're like, just give me pens and pretty paper. to-do lists, but it's all about crossing over on to-do lists. So for me, and this is something I try to do, don't always do, and that's the whole thing. Then I don't self-flagellate because I'm being kind to myself.
Yeah.
So basically, it's a bit of a get-out, because if you mess anything up, you're like, no, don't beat yourself up. Just be kind to yourself.
Have another Benny Hedgehog.
It's hilarious. I'm like, no, I'm fine all the time. I'm doing the best I can.
Just the best I can.
But to-do list, I think I always have one on the go. I have numbers of them on the go, but keeping them separate. So work to-do list is always completely separate to anything else. And then I have a long-term list, which is basically goals in life, things to do at some point before I die, bucket list kind of thing. But that's been rolling on since I was about 25. And you can cross them off. You can change your mind. There's no rules. And then we're like weekly to-do lists of normal stuff to do. But you should put yourself on the to-do list. Like go for a walk should be like...
Go for a walk.
That should be on your... And also blocking time out. I'm terrible because I work on a daytime show at not necessarily having a lunch break. But... I've always said to people, why don't you just block out half an hour as a meeting, and then people can't put it in meetings in your diary, and that's your time.
You're going to be a guru for the world.
Oh, wow.
No, I really think so.
I'm going to put that on my next book cover. Guru to the world. I love it.
And I know you signed a 2-book deal.
I did.
I know. Don't tell us what the next one's about.
Oh.
If you want to.
I can.
Go on.
Oh, your face lit up. It's like Christmas has come early. So I'm currently writing book 2.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. The second book is called The Friendship Formula. Adding great friends, subtracting toxic people, and multiplying your happiness.
Sounds great. Look at producer Alice. This is so cool, isn't it?
So it's about it's a real look at female friendship, but friendship in all its forms, particularly women. But it's really looking at what makes a good friend and what our learned behaviour of making friends is. Cutting out toxic people and what to do when friendships go wrong.
Obviously, can I contribute to your book?
Oh yeah, of course. I did a survey for this one, which was really interesting, that was anonymous, and I'll be doing another one that will be going up on my social media in the next month. A survey to share things, and people can do it either anonymously or put their name to it. Cutting out relationships, sort of work, when you're friends with people at work, how that works, platonic benefits, friends with exes, the whole shebang. I think it's, and also one chapter I think is going to be really interesting is parents and non-parents. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's where I can come in.
Exactly.
I don't know.
But I find it fascinating. And I think, you know.
I think friends for history's sake as well as another.
Oh, yeah. When to let them go. Yeah. And how you kind of mourn a friendship and put to one side. Also, meeting people on social media in real life.
Yeah.
Because I've done that a couple of times now. And sometimes it goes really bad. And sometimes it goes really well.
Do you know, this isn't about me.
So that's going to be out next spring.
Oh my God, you're so busy. Kindfulness is out now on Head of Zeus, and it's available everywhere. Hello, Amazon. Follow at @HOZ_books for more where to buy info. And for updates on all Caroline's brilliant projects, follow her on Twitter at @ShowBizMilly.
Lucky Solo.
I'm Bibi Lynch, and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, SohoRadioLondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio on Great Windmill Street. I'm joined in the studio by the wonderful Caroline Millington, and it's time for My Soho.
Soho Radio. My Soho with Bibi Lynch.
Can I tell producer Alice, can I tell Caroline my Soho story? Which I say to every story to everyone, but it just makes me laugh. So I saw a bloke coming out of a sex shop in Soho and then clicked his jaw and then walked on. Hello? Hello, Caroline Millington.
I don't know what to say.
I'm just saying.
Wow.
So anyway, hey, when... Before you... just thought it was your date. Just thought it was early. Before you ever came to Soho...
Yes.
Where are you from?
I'm from Rugby.
Are you?
In Warwickshire.
So it wasn't too far.
Midlands?
I guess it is, isn't it?
It was really far.
Geography's not good. Edit that. So before you ever came here, what did the name mean to you? What does Soho like evoke in you? How old were you when you first came to Soho?
I came to London probably the first time. I don't know if I came to Soho. My dad brought me down for the day when I was about 7 to London, to look around London town. And then I came down to London. My sister Leanne went to university down here, University of Greenwich, many years ago. I came down when I was about 15 and stayed with her in halls of residence. I can't remember going to Soho then either. So I think the first time I kind of explored Soho was when I came down and met you. When I was doing work experience, so that would have been at Mappin House.
Yeah. Endeavour.
Endeavour House. So sort of Shaftesbury Avenue, so wandering about sort of at lunchtime in my next suit, which my mum had bought me, so I looked smart. And then realised no one...
Specifically for work experience. Oh, that's so cute.
Because that's what you do when I was... I must have been about 19, 20.
Pop socks?
Oh, I don't know. Probably just really bad clothing. I don't know what I was doing.
God, so cute.
But, you know, I'll slip back in my jeans soon. It's fine. So wondering about then, I don't think it made as much of an impression back then when I was a student, because I was just like a deer in headlights. I was at Loughborough University at the time. So I was very Middle England, nice campus university.
My brother John went there. Do you know John?
Really?
John Lynch, my brother.
No, I don't.
Anyway, Karen.
Should I? Hi, John.
Hi, John.
So really for me, Soho was when I moved down, I did a couple of work experience stuff and then moved to London and went to City University in Islington. And
the journalism course there,
yeah,
which is an amazing one.
I know.
Yeah.
So graduated in 2000 and then my first job was at Smash Hits magazine. Yay. I was the one writing up the song lyric cards.
Well, you took that. You've carried that through your career, haven't you?
Oh, exactly. And that was Mappin House. So that's when I think discovered Soho and started wondering about. I've definitely become more of a fan, sort of probably in the last decade than
the
early one. Yeah.
So what does it mean to you now then?
Big Nights Out.
Still?
Yeah. Still? I'm not that old. I am. Yeah, I spend more time in Soho now than I did years ago. I think, depending on where I worked, but I was sort of around, work-wise, London Bridge area, Waterloo area for a long time. So wouldn't necessarily go into Soho. And it was like, should we go to Soho? But that was always like, it was always a late night thing to do. Mm. Whereas now, I will come into Soho as a destination in the last couple of years and have a wander about or, yeah.
It's a place you can kind of do on your own, isn't it?
Completely.
Which I love.
It's very comfortable because it's for everyone and belongs to everyone. That's how it feels. Like the vibe is, it's so inclusive. You can walk around quite comfortably and probably chat to random people and just hang out and people, oh, people watching. It's the best place to get people watching.
Oh, we love it. Don't go to Soho. When we have a My Soho guest in, we ask them to think of three songs that for whatever reason remind them of Soho or kind of just go, yeah, Soho in their head. Caroline Millington has chosen a Cher.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yes, queen.
Yes, queen. Why have you chosen this song?
Karaoke.
Okay.
So,
are you going to sing along?
No. I mean, I can. I can't even remember what bar I was in. I remember I had a night out. This was a long time ago with my sister who doesn't live in London, so I'm not quite sure what we were doing. And then I met friends afterwards, and all I remember is it was a gay bar. That narrows it down, because that's normally where you find me. Downstairs, and there was like a drag queen introducing karaoke, and I stood up and sang Cher because that was a good idea, and it was I mean they loved it, so it was fine. But and I did it, I mean, so that might have been 10-15 years ago, and then I did it again at the Admiral Duncan last year or the year before.
So this is now your song, this is your karaoke song.
This is one of them. Yeah. I did karaoke not in Soho.
Yeah.
A week ago.
Yeah, and what did you sing?
What didn't we sing? So karaoke, it was four of us, except for one wasn't singing. So three.
So that's ABBA.
So three 40-something women on a Friday night eating Japanese food.
Yeah.
Just sat down singing musicals and Disney songs. Yeah. We were living our best lives.
Do you think you sing this better than Cher does?
No.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Because you seem quite confident about this.
But it's a good song to belt out. It has meaning for me. And I love Cher.
It has meaning.
I love Cher. I went to see Mamma Mia 2 twice and cried both times. I know.
Yeah.
I'm single. This is not
Are you
good.
Single? This is such a surprise. Could you please...
Shall we hear it?
Yes.
Woo.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way, I'd take back those words that'll hurt you, and you'd stay. I don't know why I did the things I did. I don't know why I said the things I said. Cries like a knife, it can cut deep inside. Words are like weapons, they wound sometimes. I didn't really mean to hurt you. I take back.
Yeah, Caroline, what would happen if you do Bon Jovi?
There's a really long intro.
Sure.
So you have to stand there for ages.
Yeah.
But Cher really gets to it quickly, so it's a much better song. Karaoke!
Would you ever go the wig route? Would you ever go full on Cher, like, you know, see-through top? Mm. No? No? You're not channeling Cher, are you? You're just, it's an homage.
Yeah, it's me doing Cher. I don't want to dress up as Cher.
No. Who do you want to dress up as?
Ooh. Who would I dress up as? Probably Taylor Swift. I'm a massive Taylor
obsessed.
Swift fan.
Are
I
you?
Know, yeah.
And you're 40?
Yes!
Tay-Tay.
I'm not ashamed of this.
Why?
I like her. I like her songs.
Do you?
And I think she's cool.
Do you think she looks uncomfortable dancing?
No, I don't. But I don't think she, I think she's worked hard on that. I don't think she's a natural dancer.
Do you think her and Gary Barlow should do a little dance together?
Oh, that'd be nice.
That'd be beautiful.
Oh my
it?
God! Can you imagine Taylor and Tate that?
Tay-Tay that.
That would be awesome. Let's make that happen.
We know people. Please never make that happen. Anyone else? What's your favourite Soho bar, restaurant or venue?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. Can I just list some? Or...
Just list.
So I really, I like for dinner, I did a little, went out for dinner and ended up doing a three venue from three different nationalities dinner.
Oh,
everyone
nice.
Should do this.
Well done.
So we went to Hoppers, yes. Sri Lankan, which is, put our names down. Then we're around the corner and there's a little Spanish tapas place around the corner. And I'm going to pronounce it wrong if I try. But so we like had a starter in there.
Yeah.
Just some nibbles and a drink. Yeah. Then went to Hoppers for dinner, which is
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
And then left there and went round the corner and had gelato for... So everyone should do that. You shouldn't just stay in one restaurant
this
for dinner.
This is such a good idea because often the cuisine that you've chosen for doesn't do the pud you want.
Exactly.
Can I tell you what me and my brother did on Sunday?
You can.
Daniel took me out for lunch. Hi, Dan. And we couldn't decide which roast dinner we wanted, so we got three.
No, that's genius. Why would you not do that?
And then a bowl of chipolatas.
Yeah, and then shed it all up.
Yeah.
See, that's the same
that's
kind of
right.
thing. That's
all right.
Why don't narrow your choices in life? No.
Is that in the book? Like, put that. Come on, this
no,
is the next
but
book.
I'll put in the next one.
Bowl of chipolatas, featuring Bebe Lynch. So you just went to three restaurants and you love them and that's it.
What, in an evening.
What ice cream flavour did you have?
Oh, do you know? I have no idea. Probably mint choc chip. I like
oh,
that.
Really?
It's a bit retro.
It is retro. It is retro.
It reminds me of my dad.
Does it?
Yeah, he loves a bit of mint choc chip. So I don't know what I had. I have no idea, but it was good. I'd probably had quite a lot of wine by that point.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So I like sort of wandering around, trying different places like that.
Are you a good drunk?
Oh, yeah.
You think you are.
No, I
no,
am.
Someone who says, oh, yeah, so readily thinks they're a brilliant drunk.
No, I am. I'm the one that I will get people home from my own birthday party.
Wow, really?
Yeah. So I'm kind of a sober... People often don't know when I'm drunk because I'm quite a sober drunk. Even if I'm drinking so much, I've got double vision. I go, oh, I've got double vision. I need to take myself home.
Okay.
Like, I'm really not sensible. I mean, there are bars, like, I've been in the edge and swung around that pole. Like, I'm not just some boring, but... You know, I'm quite. I'm good at looking after myself.
Oh, that's really
nice. Yeah, so I'm not. I don't really. I'm just. I talk even more and even louder, but I don't do anything
too naughty,
too crazy.
When
no.
you get home, do you kind of put yourself in the recovery position, right next to a phone, and have like you know the police on speed dial?
No, I normally make myself a cup of tea.
You do not.
I
make
do
yourself
seriously.
Tea.
And I've been at friends' parties before, and then it will get to three, and I'll be like, "Does anyone want a cup of tea?" and start tidying up, even though I'm drunk, because it's just my go-to.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm useful to have around.
You are very useful.
I'm like fun times, tidy up, cup of tea. I don't know.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's the best gig you've seen in Soho?
I don't think I've done gigs and stuff, but I have done theatre.
Yeah,
probably and probably like on the outskirts of, I don't know how far Soho goes in that.
Oh, it's
respect.
A square mile. Producer Nick would kick
sorry,
off about this, Alice.
Sorry, that's why
no, it's good
I'll narrow it down.
Do.
So I saw a good friend of mine, Adam Foster, is a brilliant actor, and I saw him in Glory Days. At the Soho Theatre.
Oh.
It was back, I've seen him quite a lot. He did History Boys and all sorts. And what else did I see him in? Warhorse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's an incredible actor. He was at the Soho Theatre. This is back in 2013. I did have to look up the date because I couldn't remember what it was. With Samuel Edward Cook. In Glory Days is about an ex-serviceman who returns from Afghanistan. It's quite a full-on
yeah.
play, and discovers his partner is now with his best friend.
Oh.
And it's all staged like in a pub. It's incredible because it's obviously dealing with the politics and the fallout of trauma of war.
And great that that's at Soho Theatre, because actually, badly, I only go to Soho Theatre for comedy stuff.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have thought that they would do.
Yeah.
I'm assuming this wasn't a comedy.
No, it was not a comedy. It was really, I love, and that's, I guess that's one thing about Soho, but I'm obviously into my comedy and music and just fun times, but I also like to feel uncomfortable sometimes in situations or go to things that I wouldn't normally do or have nothing to do with my life.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, how do you learn as a human being? Mm-hmm. So, and obviously, whenever Adam's in a play in London, I always go and see him.
Aww.
So, yeah, he's fantastic.
No, he's fantastic, and you're a lovely friend. Mm. And you're even lovelier guest, because I love this track that you've chosen. The second one.
Oh, which one was it?
The Promise.
Oh, yes!
Why have you chosen this?
This, again, just takes me back to nights out with all my lovely gay friends in Soho, probably at the Edge. So my friends Christian Giltinane and Marcus Gajal often throw a shindig in Soho all over the place. So there's a lot of girls allowed normally played. And I'm pretty sure I've probably been on a stage doing the dance moves. So I was like, what song? Because I was trying to think what song's really like.
This is a great pop song.
Yeah, it's a good pop song. And also, JY Bar will always play Girls Aloud. A lot of the bars that I'll go to around here.
Who would you have been in Girls Aloud?
Ooh, maybe Kimberly.
Oh.
I think not. I don't think I'm kind of... Yeah, I'm not Cheryl.
No.
I'm not Nicola.
Alice, who would you be?
So.
Is it Lily Cole? Lily, what's her name? Oh, I don't even know her name.
Nicola? She's
Lily.
She's friends with Lily Cole.
Oh, is she?
Lily?
No.
Oh, just play the track for crying out loud.
Handle.
You're listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio. Caroline?
Yes?
Don't be bitter.
Just glitter.
Just glitter. That was the promise girls allowed. What's been your most memorable night out in Soho?
Probably the most memorable ones are the ones I don't remember very well, quite frankly. But,
yeah, the police have given a statement.
Wanted posters and all the shops. There's two, if I can have two.
Sure.
One was with my nephew Jake when he was, I want to say, about five, and we'd had a day out with my sister, like, let's take Jake to London. He likes experimenting with food. He likes all sorts of food, but he really was like, I want calamari. I think it was calamari he was going on about, or whitebait. Yeah, he was five. I'm sorry, it's so pretentious. And we were like, okay. So we took all that. We couldn't find a fish restaurant.
Really?
So I'd Googled and then it was closed and we were like getting cabs everywhere and it was a mess. So we were like, okay, we promise we'll find somewhere. And we ended up, and I don't want to say it wrong, but in Randall and
Albin,
just around the corner.
Yeah.
Which is obviously really fancy, like, yeah, Oyster Champagne Bar. And he's really well behaved. So we're like, he's really well behaved. Can we come in? They were like, yeah, that's fine. And they were playing some like kind of dance track. So he's just stood there busting moves, you know, like kids dance like no one's watching. He was just like doing all this body popping. And the chef is like, oh my God, you're my favourite customer ever. Aww. So then we sat in the window with him in the middle of me and my sister, probably about 8:30 in the evening, surrounded by all these couples in candlelit romantic situations. And he shared a lobster with my sister after they'd given us a load of free calamari because he just danced his way to free food.
And then that's
we
my
got,
boy.
Yeah, and then we got in a rickshaw afterwards, my only time in a rickshaw, and went back to Charing Cross to get the train home. And he was just like, yeah, that's what I do. Like the coolest kid. And no idea that this is not what you do.
I've never even had lobster and I'm 28. Yeah. You know,
I thought 20, you were 27.
I've got older.
Okay, sorry.
He's had lobster at five.
Yeah, it was amazing. That was really
I love
fun.
Him already.
Yeah, he's really cool. He's a little dude. And then the other one would have been my, I want to say 40th birthday last year, but obviously I'm
27.
Yeah. And I didn't know what to do, and I didn't want but I wanted a market. And anyway, to cut long story short, I ended up having a dinner with sort of all my closest friends at Steam and Rye.
Oh.
Downstairs, but no one else actually came down to eat. So we like had it as a private venue. And Adam, who I was talking about earlier, the actor, decorated it all for me because he's my best friend's brother. So she was like, Adam, you need to go there early and decorate Aww. It. So I didn't know that they'd decorated it. And it was just a really chilled out mishmash of all my different tribes of That's friends.
Nice. Which is always a bit nervy, bringing them all together.
Yeah, different little tables. And my sister is a teacher, got the train down from the Midlands just for the night and then got the last train home. It was really cute.
Did Jake turn up?
No, he didn't. But I'd already had another birthday party, which my sister organised, which I said, I want one for the kids. Aww. So she hired the local village hall and we had a blow at Bantz Castle and we had a kids party for my 40th. I've got a niece, nephew and a load of godchildren.
This is so brilliant.
So it was really cool. So Aww. That was nice. And then we went to, after my actual 40th, we went to Archer Street dancing, which was really nice.
What was your the best 40th birthday present you got?
Ooh. My sister bought me a bracelet that had it was handmade, a little silver tube of super glue as a charm, because that's the phrase that we use to say I love you. Because Aww. When we lived together years ago, there was an advert on TV, which I won't sing, but was I'm sticking with you because I'm made out of glue.
Yeah.
And everything. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And yeah. Everything I'm going to do, I'm doing it too. So we used to sing it to each other and then be like super glue. So she had a charm made of a little tube
that's
of super
really
glue.
That's really lovely. Yeah.
I love my sister.
I love your sister.
She's awesome. You can't have her. She's mine.
Yeah, whatever. You'll see. Let's see. Kindfulness is out now on Head of Zeus, available everywhere. Follow at HOZ_books for more where to buy info and for updates on all Caroline's brilliant projects. Follow her on Twitter at ShowbizMillie. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, BB.
It's been such fun. Ta-ta. And please introduce your final Soho track. I know, I understand this is your favourite song.
It's so not my favourite song and I'm regretting it deeply, but it came out I think in 2001 and
look
just
at me mate I'm not helping with this.
I reckon it was 2001. We'll look at it afterwards. But it just reminds me of coming to London in those early days. It's such a iconic song. It's so bad. It's one of those, for me, it's so bad, it's brilliant. But it reminds me of being very young and going to pubs after work and, drinking and
dropping,
having fun. At
dropping
like,
your...
Yeah.
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 We'll sing it together at this karaoke.
Okay.
This thing right here is letting all the ladies know what guys talk about. You know, the finer things in life. Check it out. Ooh, that dress so scandalous, and you know I never couldn't handle it. So you're shaking that thing like who's the ish, with a look in your eyes so devilish. You like to dance on the hip hop spots. To the cruise, like an act of dots. Not just urban, she liked the pop, cause she was living la vida loca. She had dumps like a truck, truck, truck. Thighs like wah, wah, wah. Baby, move your butt, butt, butt. I think I'll sing it again. She had dumps like a truck, truck, truck. Thighs like wah, wah, wah. All night long. Let me see that thong.
Soho.
Hey,
on Soho Radio. Yeah.
By the glorious Curtis Mayfield. Welcome to the second hour of BB Does Soho. I'm BB Lynch and you're listening to Soho Radio Culture, sohoradiolondon.com, and click on Culture. And we have an app. Go to the App Store and search for Soho Radio. Coming to you from our beautifully bijou pop-up and studio, I don't know what it means, on Great Wimmel Street. Come down and say hello. If you're too shy to say hi, tweet us at Soho Radio or at BB Lynch. We would love to hear from you. So the brilliant Caroline Millington just entertained us with tales of her Soho. Did you learn anything, producer Alice? And in a few minutes, the fabulous writer and journalist Claire Woodward will be here talking Croydon Literary Festival. But first, ladies and gents, it's Rose Royce and Wishing on a Star.
I'm wishing on a star.
Guess what? Our final guest is here. Welcome to Soho Radio, writer, journalist and programme director of Croydon Literary Festival, Ms. Claire Woodward.
Thank you very much. That makes me sound like a proper grown-up.
You are a proper grown-up. How does that feel?
Programme director. It makes me sound like from the 1920s, you know, with sort of men on, you know, the BBC radio going, that's just the home service. But the Croydon Literary Festival is not like that. So that's good. We're more, we've loosened our corsets and we're quite funky and a little bit eccentric, as you would imagine.
Well, as I'd imagine. I looked at the website. And I loved the website.
Well,
and there is so much going on. It's actually, and I loved your strapline. So, Claire, is there more to Croydon than you think?
There is more to Croydon than you think. And it's nice as well. I think Croydon's had a bad rap over the years. You know, they're always trying to, you know, say, oh, it's marvellous. But there has been a cultural resurgence there. You know, things like Rise Gallery with all the great graffiti art, which is always changing. So it's worth just going just to keep seeing the new stuff all the time. And there's loads of community arts associations there, but since the Fairfield Halls, you know, well known, Fairfield Halls in Croydon, it's closed for a fabulous refurbishment. You know, we did the first festival last year in order to sort of kind of keep up the cultural content along with all the other people who are doing
stuff. So while that wasn't there, you were...
While that wasn't there. And that will be open next year. Hooray! And it'll be amazing. But we're still doing the Croydon Literary Festival with our own crazy little... you know, we're not an established, you know, we're not the Henley Literary Festival and we're not... Hay on Wye quite yet, but I just think we've got a fun programme that people will really like.
I love the look of pretty much everything.
Good,
and
good.
It's one day.
It's all in
it
one day.
It needs to be more.
It needs to be more. We'd probably all have a nervous breakdown.
Doesn't matter.
If it was more.
Think of the readers.
Think of the readers. Yes, that's true. If we've got one kid to read a book and I die, then that's worth it.
Well, that got dark quickly, but well. But that's nice. So this one, this year, it's the second, and it's it is much bigger than last year. Mm. So you've got more venues and you've got some younger reader staff.
Yes, we've got our director of the children's programme, Sarah Kingsford, is brilliant, and she's got some fantastic writers. You'll probably hear some rustling. There's just so much going on here that I have to read off a sheet. What have we got? We've got lots of sessions for families. There's a great writer called Robin Stevens who's written a series called Murder Most Unladylike with schoolgirl detective Daisy Wells and Hazel Wong. So that sounds really, really lots of fun. And I know she's a, you know, real, you know, crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
She does loads of literary festivals.
So what was your, when you were thinking of books to cover and guests and people to have on as speakers, what was your remit?
Well, the first year was, oh my God, God, I don't know how we're going to do this. So it's quite a lot of people I knew last year. So we know what friends are like. They're very wonderful things. And this year it's, I don't know, we go for the sort of quirkier things because the bigger authors will do the massive, massive festivals because that's part of their promotion thing. And while we're sort of building up our sort of... catalogue of artists, you know, we go for people that we think are going to be good fun. I mean, we've got John Otway performing and doing a reading. I mean, tickets are unfortunately not really free. See what I did there. But we've got him coming along. We've got a great session on toilet books. Can I say toilet on Soho Road?
I think that's the... I think you can. Don't go to the toilet on Soho Road. And that's with our gorgeous Tom Jackson's being interviewed.
Gorgeous, gorgeous Tom Jackson.
And Louis is interviewing. And,
yeah, Louis Barf is interviewing him. And we've also got Phil Norman, who's written a book called, I think it's 500 Years on the Toilet or something like that, which is, and also Jason Hazley, who's the comedy writer, co-creator of Philomena Kunk and the adult Lady Bird books. She's wonderful. And it's basically a session on comedy books, but it's quite easy because they do kind of end up in the toilet sometimes.
Such
you just
a cool
you know
idea.
You're looking at the meaning of lif while you're, you know, with an Andrex puppy doing something. So it's quirky.
What beautiful pictures you paint with your words.
I know, it's beautiful. I should be a writer. But I mean, also, we've got a great session on how to write an erotic novel.
Ooh, how?
Matron. Well, you'll find out when you see Zach Jane Keir, local author.
Yeah, did you want to have a few local
people?
Yes,
we've got Elizabeth Shepherd, who's a local author, talking about a memoir that she's done with an artist called Nikki Nichols called Not a Proper Child. So it's about, you know, Nikki had a terrible life, terrible childhood, and now she's an artist and she's turned her life around. So it's Elizabeth's first book. She was actually at the Literary Festival last year, Liz Shepherd. We had a panel on So You Want to Write, and she was actually writing her first novel at the time. So it was really interesting to have her on a panel with literary agents and self-published authors and Scott Peck from Unbound Books. It was just really interesting to have that whole panel of how you actually get off your bum and do it.
Did it inspire you?
Yeah, I mean, I think every journalist got about 20,000 words of a half-finished novel or seven.
I call it Twitter, but yeah.
Has anyone written a novel on Twitter yet?
Oh, we must. Someone must have.
There used to be a blog thing where people would start writing novels and then someone else would continue it.
Yeah,
like
that's
Chinese
a cool
whispers.
Idea.
Remember
yeah,
the days of blogs? Yeah. My God.
Good times.
Good times.
Terrible times. not paying times. Like today's times.
Like today's times, yes.
So, well, tell us about the venues that you have, and then we're going to play a track, and then we're going to hear more about the content, and who's been booked and everything. Not me, I notice.
Next time.
Thank you. which venues have you got?
It's at the Croydon Clock Tower Arts Centre, which is in the library complex in Catherine Street in Croydon, just a very, very short distance from East Croydon Station. And we've got the Braithwaite Hall there, which is a beautiful sort of medieval looking hall, which is lined with books, which may not actually be real ones, but they look really nice. We've got the David Lean Cinema. David Lean was from Croydon.
I didn't know that.
Oh, fact fans, there you go. So David Lean's from Croydon. We've got the wonderful Croydon Library, who've been so helpful to us, really passionate staff there, got events there, and others in the Clock Tower building. And then we've got an after-show party at the Spread Eagle pub with an amazing pub quiz, which is written by Tim Footman, who's actually been on Mastermind and Brain of Britain. So he's quite clever.
This is why your festival's better than the others. How many of them end with a pub quiz?
Hardly any. I can't imagine anyone going from Hay on Wye going, right, let's go to the pub next door and let's win a bottle of, Prosecco and some, I was going to say wine gums, but I mean...
What do you mean?
Oh, I mean gums? Fruit drops or fruit something drops. Or something like
okay.
that.
Humbugs.
All right, humbugs or something like
while
that.
While you were talking, Claire... Producer Alice did the two silent sneezes. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, they were pretty good, weren't they?
I didn't even notice.
That was seamless.
That was unbelievable. Have you learnt to silent sneeze because you're on the radio?
Maybe subconsciously.
That was extraordinary.
This is why we need radio pros, isn't
wow.
it? Not just amateurs who turn up.
And maybe some would say me drawing attention to it makes me less of a pro. I don't know. Let's have another track and then we'll hear more about the Croydon Literary Festival. It may be winter outside, bracket, open bracket, but in my heart, it's spring, close bracket. Claire, do you know what a bracket is?
I do know what a bracket is.
That was Love Unlimited.
You put a shelf up with it.
without Barry White.
Oh, no Bazaar.
He's dead.
He's dead. It's a shame, isn't he? He was a big lad.
I miss dead people.
I miss a lot of dead people. I was looking through my old journalist contacts book the other day and it was like watching Dad's Army. He's dead, he's dead, she's dead.
Oh, jeez. Did you cross me off?
Only heart.
I'm only dead in my heart.
Your cold, dead heart, yes.
But the rest of me is alive. You're listening to BB Does Soho on Soho Radio. And I'm joined in the studio by fabulous writer and journalist, the most beautiful hair in showbiz, Claire Woodward. Look at that hair.
You can hear it, can't you?
I love it.
Crispy hair.
It's not crispy, it's curly. Really nice. I'm going to touch it.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk more about the Croydon Literary Festival and who's on. So we've talked. So toilet books. We were talking about
that came very easily, didn't
thank
it?
Thank you. Yes. Yes. And so we should say. So Tom Jackson is the man behind the brilliant Postcards from the Past, and there's a book, Twitter account, and podcast that you've been on. I've been. We've both been on that.
Listen to Tom's dark brown, beautiful voice.
It's ridiculously good. Nice voice. I was going to. I know. I really just want. A voice. I wanted to say. I'm going to make a joke about oral sex.
Mm.
And even now, I'm regretting saying that because none of it's gone. No, you know what I mean, Alice. Sorry, Alice. How old are you, Alice?
22.
Jesus, Claire. I'm not. I'm not letting them in the studio anymore. This is your last time here, so have fun. but you've got, voices. I love it. I could fall in love with a voice.
Absolutely.
Could you?
Well, if they sort of had dating sites for voices and you could, you know, hear what people sounded like.
And it should be called Oral Sex.
Come on, investors.
Come on out there.
We need you.
We need you.
It's better than looking at pictures of men who are holding big carp, isn't it?
Really wondered what you were going to say there. She put her hands out in
carp.
A carp.
That's carp. A carp.
That's a carp.
A load of old carp.
Have you had many dick pics sent to you?
No, I haven't.
Do you want some?
Yeah. You could do BB's big book of them, couldn't you?
Exactly.
A pop-up.
Scratch and sniff. Does that still happen?
Yeah, well, there's next Christmas's bestseller.
There you go. Thank you, everyone.
And then you can come to the Croydon Literary Festival.
Finally. So you've also, and I love the sound of this. Actually, there's two other, I think the whole programme does sound absolutely brilliant. I love this from Men Who Write Romance.
Isn't it good?
So that's Mike Gale. Who was Nagini on? Uncle.
Was it Just 17 he was
on? Yeah, I think so.
He's just gorgeous. I think he's very swoonsomely handsome. But, he's made a career of writing sort of, you know, romance books, often from a guy's point of view. And we've got him on with the equally gorgeous Justin Myers, who I think most people know as the guy liner, the guy that writes the Guardian dating blog, I think he's best known for. And we've got them in conversation with Elaine Canham, who's a writer, and she's written a Mills and Boone or two, you know, a bit of heaving bosomry going on there. But I think it's very interesting because I think these guys have got something else to say about romance. And I think it's really interesting that we can hear it from a guy's point of view because, you know, men can be romantic. I have yet to have this proved to me, but I'm sure they can be romantic.
They put a ribbon around the carp. when you with these, so are these panels with people discussing the genre, or are they reading, or is it advice, or how does
I think
it work?
There will be some reading going on, and it'll just, you know, be the two guys talking about, you know, how they do the things they do with Elaine, and there's obviously opportunities for questions and answers at the end, and
we just have to have that.
Yeah, exactly. And also, if people have paid for a ticket, you know, they want to feel involved. This is the thing about books, isn't it? You know, they do take you to somewhere, and people get so passionate about them that they want to share things, and this is what we hope people will do. You know, if they haven't got a ticket on the day, bought any ticket in advance, we'll have, you know, a few available on the door during the day, and just come along and meet people. And you know, there'll be lots of local writers, and there'll be a readers group where you can, you know, it's about reading together and being social.
Is this the reader leader?
The reader leader thing, yes, exactly. You know, you just sort of turn up and read together, you know, in a way like you did in school, but you volunteer to be there because it's nice and it's fun and, you know, it's great. I mean, this is what I'm planning to do with my retirement. Just sit and read books with other people and drink cups of tea and eat Nice biscuits and have a laugh.
Oh, you call them Nice biscuits. You're so posh.
Nice. They are.
I know their niece.
You call, nice. You, oh, it's nice. That is nice. That's nice.
Yeah, so we're...
Stop mocking my voice.
So when I go to Bar Italia, I always go in there and I could look Italian. I could look a little bit Italian. Mm. So I go in there and I always want them to go, you know, ciao, bella. You know, where is Italy from? And I was go, oh, you know, hi, could I have a decaf latte, please? And they go, latte? They take the piss out of my voice. These are my people not accepting me as their people.
Well,
instead they mock me.
I think it was John Finnemore that did a sketch about going into a coffee shop and being too embarrassed to say grande because the fear he would sound like a ponce with his inner voice.
And I can't just, say it. That's hilarious.
Can I have that one. Pointing or a medium? Then they give you Doris Stokes.
You know? There she is.
One for the teenagers.
Are you doing stand-up at the Literary Festival?
I shan't be doing stand-up, but I think my stand-up career of 6 gigs was more than enough for anybody, frankly.
What was your favourite?
Did you do 6 gigs? I did 6 gigs of stand-up. I did a stand-up comedy course along with every sort of youngish man in London. And I was so nervous. I hated it. I used to do a joke about... what was it about not doing the lady garden enough and having a badger down my pants and going to see the
osteopath? Come on, that's gold. That's
something.
Gold. Come on,
comedy
Alice.
Gold. Yes. So yeah, enough stand up. But we have got Rosie Wilby, who lives locally to Croydon. Everyone lives locally, don't they? Paul Merton once said. So she's an author and she'll be doing some stand up. And we've also got Ronnie Golden. Who is amazing. He used to be in the Fabulous Poodles back in the day. And now he's a writer and performer. He does lots of gigs with Barry Cryer. And
this is such a great programme.
Well, I mean, we're so grateful to the people who've come along because I was having an oral fist fight with someone.
Okay.
Matron again. On Facebook the other day, and someone said, who's coming to the Croydon Literary Festival? Croydon and literary don't go together. And it's like, well, we have to make something for the community. I hate to sound like some social worker, but it just brings people together. And I do think that, you know, Croydon's had its ups and downs in the past.
Where hasn't?
But yes, exactly, where hasn't?
At least it's not Penge.
No, I love Penge.
I know you do.
Penge. I mean, yeah, I'm from Stevenage. I know what it's like to grow up in somewhere that has a bit of a reputation for not being great. it's just great to do these things. You know, when we the Rise Gallery last year had the Andy Warhol walking tours, you know, It's there if you want it. I mean, I think, you know, in Stevenage we'd have events and people would assume, if it's in Stevenage, it's going to be rubbish. But you've got to give these things a go. Otherwise, you know, if you don't use it, you'll lose it kind of thing.
Thank you.
Hey.
Hey, when you were growing up, what was your... Were you from a household with lots of books in? Were you a reedy house?
No, we didn't have many books at all, which I was, we had things like, what did we have? The Bible, lots of Bibles with dead...
And I see that in you in your tweets.
You see that in me.
I noticed that in your tweets.
We used to have Bibles with lots of scary rose petals pressed in them. And then what else did we have? a series of books in a bookshelf from the Companion Book Club that I never saw. They used to be like in the 50s and it was like an old-fashioned book club. I never saw any of my parents read any of them. I think they just got... Well, books do furnish a room, don't
they? Look
they?
Beautiful, don't they?
They look lovely.
They look beautiful. Do you have... you're from a bookie house?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah,
you're so lucky.
I love books. I'm reading The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo at the moment.
Are you? I wrote that.
He's dead.
Oh, he's dead. All dead. My house had, there was one book, The Six-Fingered Stud. And let's play a track.
Like a man maintained.
Paul Weller and The Changing Man. Oh, he's still going. What do you think Paul Weller's favourite book is?
I think it'd be something by, you know, Colin Wilson, possibly from the 1960s, a bit beatniky, I would say.
What do you think?
Well, there is
a bit Jack Kerouac.
Adrift in Soho, maybe.
Oh,
which is shortly to be released as a feature film.
I want to be in a film.
You can be in a film,
can I?
Yeah.
Not the films that you and I made. Something with better lights.
I did used to work in a building where they made films like that.
It
was fabulous because my editor at the time, he ended up sleeping. I worked on OK magazine, and my editor was sleeping in the porno studio one night, and he sort of, you know, because we were working on an OK wedding, and he ended up said, "Oh, I'll wake up and I'll have a cup of coffee and I'll find some cups in the dishwasher." And he opened it. It was a dishwasher of dildos, which I wish it had happened to me because that would be the title of my autobiography.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take it. There's a theme to this show. It started off with a sex toy gift.
Did it?
I gave my boss here a vibrator. Well, he hasn't thanked me.
Bit rude.
Maybe he hasn't seen it yet. So also at the Croydon Literary Festival, which is this Saturday, I will give out all the details at the end. You've also got How to Love Brutalism.
Oh.
Fab.
John Grindrod is so amazing. He's a sort of, you know, a boy brought up in the borough of Croydon, and he's written so much, not only about the architecture of Croydon, but in his last book, Outskirts, he wrote about growing up on the outskirts of London. And there was so much about his family in it. He is such an absolutely brilliantly involving writer.
What a compliment to a writer to have. Brilliantly involving. That's brilliant.
Well, you know what it's like. You know, you read a book and, you know, when you find one that really, you know, grips you and makes you really feel things. I mean, this is what's so wonderful about Outskirts. It was he made you understand his family. You know, they sort of, you know, came from the East End and, you know, grew up on was basically the last street in London before all, you know, before the Green Belt happened. And, you know, you understand why they moved for a better life, you know, like my family did from London to Stevenage. And you just find yourself involved in what is a book about outskirts and architecture and town planning. Who thought town planning could be interesting? John can make town planning and brutalism absolutely fascinating. And he came to the festival last year, and he's one of our most talked to Peter Watts, and he was one of our most popular sessions because people just love him. He's so passionate about it, and he's, you know, often writers leave Croydon, but, you know, he still lives fairly locally and he still writes about it, which is lovely.
And you've also got, and I love this, I love the sound of this, it's you interviewing friend O's show and Fleet Street legend, Leslie Ann Jones.
She is such a Fleet Street legend, isn't she? Yes. Where do you start with Leslie Ann Jones?
She came on this show and brought a bottle of champagne.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, yeah, I've bought one too.
It's a pomade.
Yes.
Oh, yes. But, I mean, she's really on a roll at the moment because she's... the Bohemian Rhapsody film premieres tonight, and her Freddie Mercury biography was, she was a consultant on the first draft of the movie, and she'll be talking about that, and she'll be talking about the David Bowie book she's written and the Mark Bolan, and she's written a book about her days in Fleet Street too, which is pretty...
A memoir,
which will be absolutely fascinating because, you know Leslie Ann, she had access to celebrities that we just never have now.
So Leslie Ann was on the show, and she, hi Leslie Ann, she's, I love her, came on the show within about 2 minutes, told us a story about when she was staying in David Bowie's place on Mustique and had broken into Princess Margaret's flat, or maybe not broken into, but, you know, gone into Princess Margaret's flat and was trying on her clothes. Where are you going to go? She lived with Latoya Jackson, flat shared with her. I mean, it's just, when does that happen?
Well, it certainly doesn't anymore. And I mean, no, those are days when I think you had sort of proper pop stars.
Yeah.
You know, they knew about life. And now,
proper access.
I'm 53, I just don't care anymore. But they were, you would actually get to know people and be their friend, which is kind of, which makes her, again, like John Grindrod, she's a very involving biographer because she can actually tell stories of her experiences with people. You know, she okay, you know, she, you know, was probably not the closest of close friends, but she knew these people well and they trusted her. And I find that really fascinating, you know, because I think journalists, we kind of not trusted anymore. And I think that's a shame because we're very trustworthy, aren't we?
We are very trustworthy. And also there's, I mean, I used to interview, I know this is your hour, but I used to interview a lot of celebrities and it got really dull because people would be so PR anodyned to death and you'd get nothing. And so it's when people like Amy Winehouse, who kind of would just say what she wanted, that's why people would love to chat to her. I don't know if that's changed now. I don't know if, because I don't interview pop, you know, I don't interview music people anymore.
There's a different level added now when you have personal publicists come in, because they are not just like a TV publicist would promote a programme and, you know, give all the actors the interviews with the actors. But now they are promoting the actor as a brand. So they are promoting them in a TV programme, but they're probably also a brand ambassador for a, you know, a high end product. So you will have maybe a high end product putting pressure on the star not to say anything controversial as well.
So what do they say? What are they allowed to say?
They say how great it is to make the film,
they're so proud of
directors, how proud they are of it.
They had some input.
Yes, they had.
But the script was amazing, didn't really need to be touched.
You know, this is why I love people like Graham Norton, who are just so candid and so grown up. You know, it's great interviewing grown-ups. I had a, you know, I'm just dropping a few names here, but, you know, I interviewed Sir Richard Eyre for the Children Act a few months ago. And, you know, this is a man who's run the National Theatre and written books and been one of the great film and TV and television directors of our time. And he was such fun, really good fun, gave of himself. We had a laugh. I was able to turn around and say to him, I think you should do a comedy next, Richard. And he said, that's what my wife says. And I think, right then. You know, Lady Eyre and I will, but you know, when people are genuinely adult and interested, it's really great. But as you say, when they're PR'd to the max, you know, it is such a shame. And that's why Leslie's got the greatest stories.
That's going to be exciting.
I think so. And I mean, you know, I can't wait to read her book, because I'm sure
I've read Heroes and it's amazing.
But her memoir will be just kind of they made, you know, because those are the days when She's a beautiful woman, and you know, she was, you know, had a bit of a honey trap, really. I think, because she was so, you know, she is so lovely and so clever. And
Why don't you just marry her?
Oh, why don't you just marry her? I took her for a Turkish meal the other night in Crystal Palace. Yeah, I treat her right.
So here are three women. Producer Alice, stop looking at porn. This segue is going to make you proud to be in radio, okay? And this would inspire you. You might want to write it down. Okay. Hey, Claire,
these are three women that I would like to interview. It's Gladys, Patty and Dion. They're super women.
Super. trying to make it home just for you. I wanna make sure that your dinner will be waiting for you. But when you get there, you just tell me you're not hungry at all. You said you'd rather read the paper, and you don't want to talk.
You'd like to think that I'm just crazy,
crazy, crazy,
when I say that you've changed. Well, I think I know the problem. You don't love me the same. You're just going through the motions, and you're not being fair.
Gladys Knight, Patti LaBelle and Dionne Warwick and Superwoman. I often wonder if Gladys Knight thinks about me as often as I think about her.
Do you think about Gladys a lot?
My first ever gig was Gladys Knight gig.
And the Pips? Or just Gladys?
And the Pips. I went to a sex workshop, obviously, an orgasm school for a feature for Moore magazine. Hello, Fiona Gibson. And Fiona gave it the best headline, which is, I'm off to orgasm school. You coming? and they were playing Gladys Knight. And I said, why are you playing Gladys Knight? And they said, well, she sings through her ovaries. So I said, what, her Pips? Silence. Come on, that is a great joke.
That is a great
silence
joke.
In the room. There was hummus. I don't want hummus at an orgasm party. Anyway, Claire... Tell me, Claire, look at me. Claire, over here. Come on, sweetie. Come on,
sorry,
baby.
The face is going,
come on, over here.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to at the festival?
I'm looking forward to the Rudy bits, obviously. Yeah. Toilets and and how to write a naughty book. But we've got a great session on the history of video games, which I think is something that you don't really see at literary festivals.
No.
We've got James Newman, who is Professor of Digital Media at Bath Spa University and creator of, get this, the National Video Game Arcade. Woohoo! And Ian Simons, who's director of the arcade, and they've written a book called The History of Video Games. So this will be, you know, you can have great Q&As, talk about development and history of video games. And what's so great about that session is it's free.
Oh, I love free.
We love free. Free is my favourite price for anything. So this is a free session at 4:15 on Saturday. So any nerds or gamers or...
That's the way to nerds. Speak to your audience.
Just sell it. Well, the last computer game I played was, I think, Duck Hunt on the Nintendo SES.
Good luck saying that on there.
So we're really pleased that they're coming down because it's something you don't normally get at events like this.
Well, you've given people something for free and watch what I'm about to do. Producer Alice, I like to give you the gift of music.
Yeah.
And Claire. That's right. I'm sorry about the hummus. You're okay with the hummus?
Yeah, I'm still thinking about that. As long as it's not fizzy hummus.
No. Oh, doesn't it bubble? Producer Alice,
yeah?
I'd like to give you the gift of music.
Okay.
What have you chosen to play today?
Ohio Players, Ecstasy.
Oh, this girl's good. So I think I need to say goodbye and thank my guests. Is that what I need to do?
Yes.
Thank you. Don't do that voice ever again. Thank you, Caroline Millington. Kindfulness is out now on Head of Zeus. Available everywhere. Hello, Amazon. Follow at HOZ_books for more where to buy info and for updates on all Caroline's brilliant projects. Follow her on Twitter at ShowbizMillie. Thank you, Claire Woodward. Yay!
Thank you.
The brilliant, I'm sorry about the hummus, the brilliant Croydon Literary Festival is this Saturday, 27th of October. To find out more and to buy tickets, go visit croydonlitfest.com. And for updates on all Claire's fab projects, follow her on Twitter at Clary Wu. I'm going to cough, someone do something. Thank you, Producer Alice. Good luck in rehab, Producer Nick. And most of all, thank you for listening and joining in. That's it from me, Bibi Lynch. Until next time, stay tuned to your wonderful Soho Radio. And I'm going to leave you with a mini Ripton track. And this is for my lovely Michael and my lovely Pete. It's been, I think it's a couple of years since Pete Burns passed. And sending love to Michael. Yeah.
Spring.